Thanks, Steve. It's Bill and Wendy. Tom Mikitas joins us right now by way of the telephone. Tom's a professor of history at DePaul University, a terrorism expert, and author of Violent Extremists, Understanding the Domestic and International Terrorist Threat. Tom, thank you for being here. Really appreciate it.
Good morning.
You're here, obviously, to talk about the situation in Sri Lanka over the weekend. The death toll stands at 290 people as of right now. There was another bomb that went off earlier this morning. Can you, if you wouldn't mind, Tom, just a brief overview of what took place the last couple of days?
Yeah, I was in Sri Lanka back in 2007 and again in 2011 doing some counterterrorism work. And this is a bit surprising because they came out of a long period of civil war and it's been pretty quiet for the last decade. But what we saw is 8 near simultaneous attacks on Easter Sunday targeting places of worship, the Catholic minority, which is about 6% of the population, as well as some Catholic shrine and, you know, several hotels frequented by foreigners. Death toll now stands at 290. No claim of responsibility, but the fingers are being pointed at this point at a little-known Islamist group active on the island, but before now has never really gotten involved in this level of violence.
More than 500 people are injured. It's just, I can't even believe these numbers. There are reports that I've been hearing this morning that government officials in Sri Lanka had a warning of these attacks earlier in the month. What do you know of that?
Yeah, I can't tell you how many times I've hit my head against the wall over the frustration of bureaucratic stovepiping, which means that intelligence gets bottled up in compartments, left on desks and offices, and never makes it up to the top of a command chain to get action taken. In many cases, it's no more than a strategic warning, hey, something could happen within this period. Case it appears to have been more specific, and for whatever reason, it never got transferred over. But, you know, as I said, I've seen it a lot. There were similar things before 9/11 in the U.S. There was a warning of an attack on Garissa University in Kenya a couple of years back during Easter time. And again, the government missed it. So sadly, this happens far more than any of us want to recognize.
So, Tom, in these instances, what you have there is you have the information given to you. It's just that it's not shared properly between the offices. Is that what's going on?
We're speculating here, but that's a pretty good guess. Bureaucracies are set up to do routine tasks extremely well. A couple of things they don't do well is to cooperate across agency boundaries for all kinds of reasons. There aren't communication links. There are rivalries. There are conflicting missions. All kinds of things get in the way of that. And so it's easy for one agency to get information for it simply not to make up through that agency's chain of command to someone who can get it addressed and taken care of.
And what would they do with that information? I mean, there were, three hotels, six simultaneous explosions. What could they have done knowing and putting that warning in effect?
They could have done a fair amount. Going back to my own experience, when I was there in 2007, there actually was an attack on the Pakistani ambassador, and we had armed guards in front of the hotel, and we were on a lockdown. So they're used to doing this. I mean, they had that ability, but when I returned a couple of years later, everybody had breathed a collective sigh of relief, and one of the things that was so refreshing was the relative lack of security. So in the absence of clear warning, you know, it's labor-intensive and costly to put on a full kind of, protection. It doesn't always work. I mean, you know, we saw with the Ariana Grande attack in Manchester a couple of years ago, they just waited till the crowd came out in the foyer after the concert. So there's no foolproof security, especially against terrorists who are interested in just killing large numbers of human beings wherever they happen to be. You know, you harden this building is the term we use. They can go next door. Now, doesn't mean nothing could have been done. But the other interesting thing to me is they had a pretty rapid roundup of people, which tells me you don't do that unless you either have pretty good information of who they are or you're casting a very wide net. It appears there was even something of a shootout because three policemen, I believe, were killed. So, you know, they obviously, when they put the puzzle together very quickly after the fact, But again, also to be fair, there's a great deal we don't know at this point.
As of now, Tom, and you mentioned this, no one has claimed responsibility for these attacks. What are the pros and cons of that move? Why wouldn't you claim responsibility if you have a message you want to get out?
Well, the question is who did it, first and foremost. As I said, a little-known Islamist group on the island. There's a Muslim population of, it's under 10%. And they've been known, like, for example, to vandalize Buddhist shrines. It's a 70% Buddhist country. But they haven't done anything like this before. On the other hand, there's speculation that they may have had ties to ISIS. And you may recall in our previous conversations that we talked about, you know, well, ISIS, as the caliphate is out, but that doesn't mean that the operatives in the network aren't functioning. This is a highly sophisticated, very coordinated series of attacks that took a lot of planning and were carried out ruthlessly but very efficiently. And that suggests that a level of expertise that a local group may not have had. So, you know, and there is some evidence that, that some Sri Lankan Muslims did go to Syria to join ISIS and may have come back. That's the biggest worry that a lot of states are facing today. What do you do with returnees, especially when you see something like this?
So, Tom, what's your guess in a situation like this? Does a local group in Sri Lanka say to ISIS, on the whole, we were planning an attack, help us through this, we need your support on this, or does the main office, ISIS, say, oh, we got to pick some places around the globe to attack, let's go local with Sri Lanka? How does that play out? Which way?
It could be either, although the central office is kind of in disarray at the moment, or a third option, which is we're seeing more commonly in what's called a mesh network, where there's great decentralization. There's a general mandate, hey, whenever you can strike a blow for the cause, do it. You know what our guidelines are. You know, we like highly symbolic days and we like highly symbolic targets. You know, and they got both. It was some early speculation. Was this the group that we were concerned with over there in 2007, LTTE, the Liberation Tigers of Tamil and Elam, was an ethno-nationalist terrorist group that was pretty much, you know, destroyed in 2009. But the odd thing was when they hit Christian targets, that suggested, you know, that they didn't fit the Tamil pattern. The other thing that's very curious to me, I at the back of my mind, I'm kind of milling around with the idea that is this in some way intended as a message in response to Christchurch? You hit us, we're going to show you. We can hit you at your places of worship as well. I mean, it's madness, but it would if that is true. It's also a very focused kind of madness, and it is the way, sadly, that some of these extremists think.
Now, you mentioned civil war ended, like a decade ago?
2000, yeah, a decade ago.
Why now? Why this now?
Well, this is, there's no, you have to look at the contemporary war. There's no connection to civil war that we can see so far of a decade ago. This is, and it appears to be Islamist extremism. So this is the thing that I keep stressing and that I cover in the book is that, you know, groups come and go. The ideologies are tenacious and pervasive. They hang around a really long time. And so I'm not, you know, I'm saddened but not surprised. And I, you know, much as we talk about, I always take a look at the glass being half full, I'm afraid we may be in for more of this as, you know, we see that this organization in the Middle East being disrupted, but the network that is global, though, you know, more concentrated in some areas than others, is going to continue to function and continue to carry out attacks.
Does Sri Lanka have the resources on its own to fight this, or who do they partner up with to fight this?
Well, we will certainly help them. They have a lot of experience. It is a relatively poor country. They have received aid. They've gotten it from us. They've gotten it from China. Particularly as part of the global war on terror, you know, and I don't know where the state of that now is. I imagine it tapered off once the civil war, the conflict ended. But, you know, I don't doubt that we will continue to help them. But, you know, it's more of a law enforcement than a military kind of thing. It's an intelligence gathering thing. You know, the terrorists are very good at countering. They're not going to take us on by playing our game. They're going to do this kind of stuff, which is very, very hard to prevent. Now, they did something very controversial but understandable circumstances, the government has shut down access to social media because they're very concerned about communal violence, because they had a couple of years ago Buddhist riots against Muslims. So the last thing you want is people out there trafficking in conspiracy theories and whipping up, you know, any kind of hysteria that could lead to yet more violence.
There has been a travel advisory issued as of Easter Sunday yesterday to exercise increased caution in Sri Lanka due to terrorism. Any worries for future attacks?
Well, obviously, when you're something this catastrophic, you have to take it seriously. Although, you know, if you looked at there are some areas where you clearly don't go. On the other hand, the State Department's warnings tend to be partly designed to protect themselves from being accused of not giving warnings. Sri Lanka, you know, is a lovely place. I think, yes, caution, being aware of your surroundings and things of that nature. But I don't know that it would merit canceling plans if you have them already, because the state will be on heightened alert and you'll see more security on the streets. I've seen that when I was there. And, you know, it means you may restrict your activities. But the truth is, very unlikely Americans or Europeans are going to go there under these circumstances. And that's part of what the terrorists want. They did this in Mumbai, India back in 2004. They just did it again, where they ended up targeting places where there are foreign nationals. That really hits the country's tourist industry.
That's what I was about to ask, Tom, is how reliant is Sri Lanka on tourism dollars? Is that one of their main sources of income over there?
It is. Not just, by the way, for Westerners. It's very interesting. There are a significant number of halal hotels and restaurants. It's a very popular place for Gulf Arabs to take vacations as well as Westerners and so on. I mean, for example, you know, English is one of the major languages because it was a former British possession. So you don't have, you know, it's easy to get around and to function in the language. It's a beautiful country. You know, nice beaches, warm oceans, some very interesting, you know, tourist things to see. And not outrageously expensive. So, you know, in that regard, you have people from all over the world, as far away as the Netherlands, Britain, Japan, etc. Some there on business. So, yeah, I mean, it is definitely going to cost them.
Tom, we appreciate your expertise on this. We really do. Stay safe and have a great rest of the week.
Yeah, the final notes, I can end on my usual encouraging thing. You know, Americans have little, you know, I mean, this stuff can happen. I've never restricted my travel or changed my plans during an attack, and I don't intend to start. So, you know, I think we got to go on with the assumption everything will be okay.
All right.
There's my human Prozac.
There it is.
Finally.
Came through for us.
You bet.
Tom Mikaitis, professor of history at DePaul University, terrorism expert, and author of Violent Extremists, Understanding the Domestic and International Terrorist Threat.
And that'll be released in June, so we'll talk to you then. You can find him, Dr. Mikaitis, on Twitter, at Dr. Mikaitis, MOCKAITIS. Thank you so much.
You bet. Have a nice day.
I'm glad he did the nice
ended
thing.
Ended on a happy note.
All right. Well, we'll keep you posted on any further developments. As you mentioned, some other bomb was found this morning. There might be more. We've got you covered right here, 720 WGN.